The Hard Shoulder on Newstalk.
With Nissan Subscribe and Drive. No deposit, no compromise, no fuss. Find out more at nissan.ie.
This is The Hard Shoulder. Kieran Cudahy with you until 7 o'clock this evening. We're going to be speaking to the former president, Mary McAleese, in just under an hour's time. This on the passing of Prince Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh, confirmed a little bit earlier today at Buckingham Palace, making that announcement. Regardless of your views on the monarchy or the institution, it is undoubtedly a historic day for our near neighbours. Take a listen to the Duke of Edinburgh himself a few years ago at an event paying tribute to his children.
Like all families, we went through the full range of pleasures and tribulations of bringing up children. I'm naturally somewhat biased, but I think our children have done rather well under very different and difficult and demanding circumstances.
Yeah, that was Prince Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh, speaking a couple of years ago about his own children. I'm joined now by Jenny Bond, the former BBC Royal Correspondent. Jenny, thanks a million for taking the time. We appreciate it today on the show. What is your reaction to this news?
Well, it's sad, of course, but that sadness has to be tempered with the fact that Prince Philip was lucky enough to have a very long life, almost 100 years old, and a very long and happy marriage as well. One sadness, I think, is for the Queen, who is now without her lifelong partner, the love of her life. And I think the predominant feeling over here in the UK is one of respect for a man who fought in the war, saw a lot of history, helped modernise the monarchy, and more than anything, was a constant support and guide to our Queen.
In what ways did he help modernise the monarchy?
Well, he tried very hard from the start to just make the wheels of court life run a little more of the 20th century, really. When he came to Buckingham Palace back in 1952, when the Queen ascended the throne, he had to give up his Navy career, which he didn't want to. He didn't have a formal role, so he had to find one. So the first thing he did was busy himself he actually went round every room practically in Buckingham Palace, and it's a very big building, and opened the doors and said, okay, who are you? What do you do? And how can I make this work better? He wanted to open up a canteen for the people, the staff who worked there. He wanted to do all sorts of things, make the palace, the mechanics, the equipment of the palace work better. You know, the heating system, even down to that kind of detail. But nearly every time he suggested anything, he was slapped down by the old guard, who felt, no, this is the way everything's been done for centuries and we're not going to change it. So he found it a real struggle at the beginning. But he continued to pursue that, and then found causes such as the environment and nature and design and science made his mark in those areas.
Is that something that Prince Charles took from him then, that love of nature and the environment?
Yeah, I think so. It was definitely his father who started campaigning about the environment a long time ago. People probably wouldn't necessarily think of Prince Philip as a very sharp intellect, but he certainly was. He had a library of thousands, and I mean thousands of books, on a very wide range of topics, from theology — he was deeply interested in theology — philosophy, bird watching, the environment, science, design, and cookery. He loved to read cookery books.
Did he do any actual cooking, or was it just reading the book?
I don't know if he actually could. He may have done, actually, when he was staying at Wood Farm for the last few years. I was just saying, he's been in Sandringham, which is a couple of hundred miles or so from London. So the Queen's been working basically at Buckingham Palace and Windsor Castle. And before the pandemic, he was up in Sandringham. So they were apart a great deal of the time. And he was staying in this place called Wood Farm. And that's where he read a lot of the books he has. And maybe he did dabble in the kitchen there.
All right. Well, we might never know. Listen, you mentioned being a World War II veteran. Like, he had quite a remarkable young life as well.
Yes, he did. A very difficult childhood, although he'd never make anything of it. When you asked him about it, he was saying, look, it's just the way it was. You just got on with it. And that was absolutely his philosophy through his whole life. Don't whinge, don't complain, just get on with it. But yes, he was born a prince of Greece and a prince of Denmark. His family were banished from Greece when he was really a baby, and they had to flee and were brought over to France, first of all. A very nomadic childhood. His parents' marriage broke up. His mother was ill, mentally ill. She was in a sanatorium. His father, more or less abandoned them, was in the south of France most of the time. And so he was housed with various royal relatives, the Mountbattens being one of those relatives. So he went from place to place and sometimes fetched up at Windsor Castle because it was a remote, distant cousin of the Queen. And their romance blossomed from there on.
It's funny, I suppose a lot of people here in recent years, they will have learned, if that's the right word, things about Prince Philip through The Crown, the Netflix series. Now, how accurate it is, I suppose parts of it we know are inaccurate, other parts we are left guessing. How close was he to his children, to Charles in particular?
He had a difficult relationship with Charles. They're very different characters, very different. Charles is a gentle, incredibly sensitive, thoughtful man. And Philip is rough, tough, action all the way. So it wasn't a meeting of souls, really. And in the early days, Charles found his father very hard on him because I think Philip wanted to toughen him up. But I think in later years, they've grown closer and had a mutual respect for one another and shared interests such as the environment. But he was very, very close to the Princess Royal, Princess Anne. She's a chip off the old block, really. And I'm sure she'd be extraordinarily sad today to have lost her father. And of course, there's Edward and Andrew as well, who were also close. They all say he was a good father. He larked around with them a lot, you know, had fun games. He would read to them at night. And as best he could, with a lot of royal duties obviously going on. He was a good dad.
Well, you acknowledge that when he came to the palace in the early 50s, there wasn't really a role for him and he had to work out what he was going to do. What is his legacy?
His legacy, I think, is the incredibly successful reign that he has helped his wife perform. I mean, it would be ridiculous to call it a dual reign, but it's quite, we just say the Queen and the Duke, don't we? My husband and I, as she says. And they were very much a double act. I've been around the world with them many times and seen how supportive he is on making a royal tour work, bringing a light-hearted touch to it, making the Queen laugh, making everyone enjoy it, getting children from behind the barriers, bringing them over and bringing them up to the Queen. So that they can present their poses. He just made the machinery of a royal tour, which is arduous and difficult. Mm. He made it work. So I think his legacy, well, the Queen herself that said that we will find that we owe Prince Philip more than we could ever recognise. That's a speech she made on the occasion of their golden wedding. And I think she's probably right. And after all, he's just someone who's been around for all of us, hasn't he, all this time?
Yeah, permanent feature in a lot of people's lives. You know, anyone born after the 50s, a permanent feature. He wanted, I read, a royal ceremonial funeral rather than a state funeral. What does that mean?
It means there's less fuss, basically. Okay. Of course, things are going to be different because of the pandemic anyway. There simply can't be the level that there might have been before. But it was always planned as a royal ceremonial funeral. So many fewer bells and whistles, if you like. So I think it'll be quite downbeat. Now, he has died at Windsor Castle. So originally, there were arrangements for the coffin to be taken obviously from London with some ceremony down to Windsor, but he's there already, so he's going to lie in rest, not in state, but just at rest privately at Windsor. And I would imagine he will be buried in the St George's Chapel at Windsor.
All right. Well, listen, Jenny, we appreciate your time. We really do. As always, Jenny Bond, the former BBC royal correspondent. I'm going to speak a little bit later in the show about Prince Philip to Mary McAleese, former president of Ireland, and her memories of him and the royal visit to Ireland 10 years ago.